In this episode of Doctor Who Podshock, we review live over the net the 2010 Doctor Who Christmas special, A Christmas Carol, with live feedback. All that and more in this episode of Doctor Who Podshock.
The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy, and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
This episode brought to you by Podshock supporting subscribers. We can't do the show without you. Go to arttrap.com/podshocksupporter to become a supporting subscriber. Support the show and get extra content and other bonuses. This episode is also brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. This episode also supported by the Doctor Who Podshock Podcast Companion app for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch, now available in the iTunes App Store. Live from Kazrin's Covered, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it now. Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
Podshock! I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 232. Hello, everyone. This is Louis Trapani, and we're here live. We're here live reviewing the 2010 Doctor Who Christmas special, A Christmas Carol. And live with me is Dave A.C. Cooper, and I'm going to bring him on in a second. We're having some technical difficulties here today. I had some massive difficulties before starting the show here, so we're running a little late, and Dave's having some audio problems as well, so I'm going to have him on in just a moment. But I do want to wish everyone a happy Boxing Day. Today's Boxing Day, so I hope everyone boxed up your goodies and brought it to maybe, you can bring it to the show today, because we could use some good fortune here. And I hope everyone's having a good holiday season. We're in the middle of the holidays here. It's December 26th. And right here, as far as where I am in the northeast of the U.S., we're dealing with a little blizzard, some snow here. A little windy, but not too bad. And so far, as long as our power stays on, we'll continue with the show. And if you, if I suddenly do disappear, you may know, that might be an indication of what might happen. And the way things have been going, I don't doubt things. Well, let's not jinx anything any further. Without any further ado, let's get Dave on. Hello, Dave.
Yes, I think the color of this podcast is loud and not very reliable.
Well, I didn't realize we were all donning the Sixth Doctor's jacket, otherwise we'll all be loud. Well, not just his jacket. But
and I do feel for you. It's very difficult when you've got all your friends in the room. You want to get on with the show. We're all excited about talking about this latest episode, and then you get thrown a wobbly.
Unfortunately, we haven't had a live show since, July, so there's been lots of changes on my end, software-wise, here, so things are set up differently here, and I had hoped to have a smooth process here, but I use when I'm on TalkShoe here, I use a client to call in called Gizmo, which is no longer available. It's now it's owned by Google, but I guess, you know, they're Googleizing it right now before they reopen it to the public again, so it's no longer available, so I can't even recommend it for others to download. But unfortunately, it's a bit dated. It hasn't been updated since that time. It's I would say a good year or so. And anyway, long story short is that it doesn't seem to be recognizing the setup the way it should be. And Dave and I recorded a Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi not too long ago, and we got things working with that, so with Skype. So I think it's a gizmo issue. So that being said, without getting too geeky here on this show, we're here to talk about, let me get this out of the way. If you have not seen the 2010 Christmas special, the Doctor Who Christmas special, A Christmas Carol. Be warned now that anything that follows after this point will be spoilery, or would be spoilery. So spoiler warning is sounded. So obviously we're reviewing this episode. So if you haven't seen it yet, it just came out yesterday, both here in the UK and the US, which is a first, you know, where the transmission was done on, you know, not simultaneously, but on the same day. Hopefully that's a sign of good things to come in the future. You can't get better than that, really, you know, other than a simultaneous transmission on, you know, at the same time. But I think that's too much to hope for.
And the good thing as well is Benjamin Elliott told us all, BBC America was airing the full 1 hour show with no cuts, I believe.
Were they? Well, I think they had commercial breaks, though, because I believe they had a 90-minute slot for, and it's an hour.
Oh, yes, breaks, but no cuts.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, Perry in our chat room just said 80 minutes, so it was an 80, well, it still had the full episode, though. I think Perry first tweeted me that it was going to be a, you know, in a 90-minute slot or an 80-minute slot, and that's what I had assumed, that they'll be showing it complete, just, but with, you know, commercials. So, yeah, that's great that they're not cutting it up. That's always a good thing. And it should be available on iTunes today, too, as I checked right before starting the show, and it's still not there yet. So I don't know if it's going to be – it's supposed to be available today, the 26th, and maybe it's going to be available at 9 o'clock, so it's exactly 24 hours after it was first shown on BBC America on the Eastern Coast, on the East Coast. I don't know. You know, as of 5 o'clock or quarter to five, whatever it was before the last time I checked, it still hasn't appeared on iTunes. So, but it's you'll be able to get it in HD, you know, complete, uncut, without commercial interruptions. And I'm assuming it will be maybe, you know, I don't know what it might cost, maybe $2.99, or the HD version might be a little bit more. I'm not sure.
And I voted for Saxon's Plot. It's listed on as 60 minutes on Xfinity's On Demand. But future viewings on BBC America will be cut.
Yeah. Well, the DVD is coming out in February. I believe it's – is it the 15th, I believe, it's coming out? So
yeah, I think
it's the DVD and the Blu-ray.
And the soundtrack is coming out very soon as well.
Are they doing a separate soundtrack just for this, or will this just be included in the next, like, series soundtrack?
Yes, I'm sure when you get Darth on, he'll be able to give you more details, but this is one that they're actually putting out as a CD for the single episode.
Yeah, very interesting. Perhaps because of Kathryn Jenkins.
Exactly. It's a big part of it, I think.
All right, well. Well, speaking of Kathryn Jenkins, she's a guest star in this episode, along with Michael Gambon and Lawrence Bletcher and Danny
Michael
Horn.
Gambon. Yeah, Dumbledore to most people.
From the Harry Potter films, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, excellent casting. I think all the guest cast in this episode were right on target. I think you really couldn't have asked for better, for the most part. And so no problems there. I think it was an outstanding cast. Were the opening titles different? Was it just my imagination, or did they look a little frosty?
Well, there was some debate on our earlier Cultum show about that. I thought they would definitely had a sprinkle of glitter.
I thought they had like little snow coverings on the like Matt Smith, you know, on the opening titles.
Yeah. And indeed, the font looks slightly different. But I'll defer to Darth on this one. It's I think he believes that Arthur Darvill's name, with the letters, the letter R is slightly different than the Doctor Who R, which is a slightly different thing. So that the font that is used for some of the names is not the standard font. But I'm sure Darth can explain it better when he comes on.
All right, okay. Well, I'm just glad it wasn't just my imagination there. So, I think the direction was good, lighting well done, music, well, we had Murray Gold back, and the music was right on cue. I think the whole thing established the whole mood of the episode. I think it all came together technically for a very good episode. And story-wise, well, it's called A Christmas Carol, so it's no accident that this is a Doctor Who take on the classic Charles Dickens A Christmas Carol, and with some twists and turns, and it's its own little flair on it all. And I think they did, for the most part, they did a very good job with that. Some little nuggets there that...
It could have ended up being rather a dark episode if they'd sort of followed it more logically, but they tried to give it a little bit of lightness with it.
Yes.
Of course, it was still dark subjects, with the father beating his boy, his son, but they slightly cheated, I thought, at the end, because, of course, the young lady, having done that final song, it was her final day of her life, so... It could have easily ended on the sad note of her death, Abigail's death, mm-hmm. which they cut away from.
Yeah, they did. And I'm also glad that, because once Catherine Jenkins was cast, and it was cast, she was cast, where she wasn't an actress and she's, a singer, and it was established that she was cast because of her singing abilities, and it just... it raised a little red flag that maybe this might, that she just might break out into song, and I was fearful that it would not work out, where it would be, more of a musical than her music being, her singing being part of the story. So I'm very glad that it was, in fact, that her singing was very much part of what the story is about. So I think that worked out well. And of course, it goes without saying that she's outstanding with her singing.
Oh, that would have been awful, a musical, Consider yourself Doctor Who.
Well, you never know.
One of the TARDIS crew. Yeah. Oh, dear.
You never know what might happen. People, they hear Christmas specials and you get, Star Wars Holiday Special. You just might just break out and swell. Let's not go there. But all right, well, let's go into the story here. Obviously, as I was saying, it's based on A Christmas Carol. So there's, and as we know, the Doctor had already met Charles Dickens, and he's, it was at that time it was told to the audiences that he was aware of Dickens' work. So, we know that the Doctor knows A Christmas Carol, and so I think that worked out very well. There was no references to him meeting Charles Dickens, but it was, the audience knows, and him talking to Amy on board the ship, and the music playing in the background, not a deal breaker there, but I think if she was on a ship crashing onto the onto this planet, I don't think she's going to be so concerned about what's playing in the background. What's that in the background? If I was her, I don't think I would be caring what's going on in the background, but whatever. But obviously they had to work that into the story there, but I think it worked well.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't want another crash of the Byzantium, but what I did like was the...
Didn't the bridge look similar? I mean, I think maybe it's just a redress of that bridge. That bridge looks very much like, what was it, the Time of the Angels? Is that the name of the episode?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought it looked a little bit like Space 1999 with all the costumes and clothes. And there was, but it was a good contrast to the... more Dickensian view of the and the steampunk of the actual planet itself.
Yes.
So it was there for contrast, and of course we don't know whether this episode or anything in it will relate to future events, any portent, but it seemed to be a very standalone episode, because the Amy and they've come on board the TARDIS, but this is really dealing with the Doctor's obviously treated them to a honeymoon on the ship, so it can be viewed as a standalone episode, I would have thought.
Yes. I mean, I forgot who, someone had tweeted me over the past couple of days saying that they had anticipated the end of The Big Bang, that the final episode of the last series. Traditionally, when that episode ends, it goes into, at the end of the episode, it goes into the precursor or a teaser of what the Christmas special is going to be, and that had nothing to do with this Christmas special. I said that was another one-off adventure they had at that phone call, was the Orient Express or something like that, and had nothing to do with the Christmas special. So there was obviously some time that had passed between that story and where the Christmas special picks up.
Yeah, and one or two people when they speak will say that how there was some clues maybe of things to come. But the point is that it's still be viewed as a standalone episode. And in actual fact, it was a rather a companion light episode, I thought.
Well, yeah, because I think, well, both the Kazan character, you know, his younger selves, and, well, I guess his current self, all, and Abigail become the companions, really, in this episode. While Amy and Rory are trapped aboard, you know, that ship that was that galaxy class starship. I thought it was a little the Enterprise from Star Trek: Next Generation was a galaxy class starship.
Yeah, and they were doing a little role playing of their own.
Mm. That's right. So I think it's a. It's a fun episode. It dealt with some heavy themes, but it still was a fun Christmas type of episode. Again, there were just a bunch of little things in that I'll just get those out of the way now that again, wasn't a deal breaker, but just it kind of just stuck out a little bit. Like when they were hauling out the doctor and that family, Abigail's family, from the sitting room or that big living room, whatever, of Karazhan's. They had like these henchmen or his his men escorting them out, including the doctor, and then the next scene is the doctor standing there by himself and like, what happened to the guy dragging him out? I guess he went with the family, whatever, because all of a sudden that guy disappeared.
Well, they made a few references where the doctor just suddenly popped up out of nowhere. I mean, when they needed the number for the combination, the doctor just quickly popped back and...
Yeah, you can see the TARDIS up the stairs, so he obviously traveled, you know, via TARDIS. There was another scene. Well, the whole... what I didn't understand was the doctor, as far as Abigail is concerned, there's a scene where... part of the story where... they put her back into the hibernation chamber, the freezing cabinet, whatever you want to call it. And this is before the doctor knows what those numbers on the cabinet means, and he doesn't know that she only has 8 days to live. But why was she so willing to put her back in there? You know, it just didn't make sense story-wise or character-wise for the doctors just to, okay, well, you know, let's go back into the freezer and just willy-nilly just put her back in there. And that's when young Kazan said that we'll see you again Christmas Eve next year. And it's just, no, you know, that's the scene I'm talking about, that first initial scene where they kind of just throw her back into the freezer for no reason. You know, it's later in that episode that both Kazan and then later on the doctor finds out what's going on. But for all intents and purposes, you would think the doctor would let her, you know, stay loose. Why put her back?
Well, yeah, when he found all those bodies that were kept in, it was in New Earth, that they were using for diseases, and they were all trapped behind, the doctor would...
I figured maybe what the doctor's thinking is that once he gets the ship saved, maybe he'll work on getting everyone out of those freezers. But once he changes Kazan's attitude around and you know, changes them, you know, from the dark side to the good side, let's just use that analogy, you know, then he would maybe release all the frozen people. But it just but Abigail was already out, so why put her back in?
Yes, indeed, because she didn't give that reveal. The couple of errors, things that I particularly like, I didn't like the shark business when they were pulling it, the silly moment in the ride. But when that first shark appears, it appears to be about 10 foot long. It was enormous.
Yeah, the size varied. I noticed that too. There's certain scenes that it looked gigantic, and other scenes it would sort of like look like a large dog.
Or a dolphin size. And those cabinets didn't seem to be cold to the touch, although they were designed to look at. But overall, I thought it was an excellent production, and the standard's brilliant. But my enjoyment of it wasn't as high as that. I could appreciate it. I could appreciate what they'd done and how they'd done it, but I wasn't that so engrossed in the story until it got to the section where the video was playing and the Doctor suddenly appears against the young boy. And although there were at least two or three times where he appeared to be talking to the boy, but of course his remarks were addressed to the older version, and then there was a switcheroo on that. Later he was going to say to the older one, "I'm going to show you your future." And the old man says, "Well, show me it then." And he says, "I already am," because the young boy was standing behind.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I thought they did that very well. That was I thought that was a clever that, because if you're familiar with the Christmas Carol, you always know those three segments. You know, Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future. And we all know that Christmas future, you have the skeleton. You know, what's this?
You see what you become.
Mr. Death, Doctor, there's a name for him, I can't think of him. But anyway, that, you just sort of was expecting to see, you know, okay, now we're going to see his future. And he says it himself, okay, show me my future, and he is, I'm already M. And I thought that was very clever by doing it, making it the child.
Lovely. Yeah.
Well, just a couple other nitpicks, just to get them out of the way, and then we can go forward, is the Doctor, going back to the freezers, he didn't notice the numbers. For him, it's a year for Abigail. Well, she's not experiencing the year because she's going into hibernation, I'm assuming. But for Karzan, it's a year. Each year passes. But he already, well, he'll find out later about the numbers, but the Doctor would, you know, he's very observant. The Doctor's supposed to be, you know, observing everything at all times, and he's not realizing that, because for him, it's just another minute. He's just going in the TARDIS and skipping a year ahead and coming back, but he's not noticing the numbers on the front of the chambers counting down, which is out of...
Yeah, and that's quite surprising when there's the earlier reference where he notices the chair.
Well, that's the other thing, yeah. He notices the chair, the painting on the wall, and he puts all the stuff together. And that's another thing. This is the first time watching a new episode of Doctor Who after seeing the Sherlock series. And now, you know, Sherlock was created by
Steve
Moffat and Mark Gatiss. And now you can see that directly in this episode right now. You know, that could have been a scene right out of Sherlock, you know, where he's explaining how he summarizes Kazan's character and puts it all together.
I thought that. I mean, there are other references that people may draw on where the Doctor's done similar things, but
yeah, he's done that in the past. Well, he's always been a bit of a Sherlock. You know, even going back to, well, you know, if you know past Doctors, you can reference stuff like that as well. But I think this was especially just the way he did it, the way he explained it, and the way it was shot was very much out of the Sherlock series, I thought.
Some people on our show alluded to the fact it was a little bit similar to the 11th Hour scene, you know, mm-hmm. when they're on the common.
Yes.
Everybody's looking at the spaceship except the man with the dog.
I thought that too. I saw that parallel as well. Oh, and the shark life. How long does the shark live? And it has part of the sonic screwdriver in it, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't pass it at some point. I mean, that we go through his whole lifetime as a child, and it's as to an adult, and the shark is still around and still has that half of the sonic screwdriver, you know, still somewhere in its digestive system. Whatever.
Well, obviously, Lewis, you've never seen Jaws, have you?
Oh, I have.
An awful scene in Jaws where they cut the belly of the shark.
Yeah, but, you know...
Basically, all bicycles fall out and everything.
Yeah, there's license plates and whatever, but I don't expect that was in the stomach of the...
The metal stays in it.
Does it? Well, I haven't seen it recently. Well, I'm glad it wasn't too Jaws-like. I thought... Going into the story, we knew that there was going to be, well, some people knew it was sort of a, you know, spoily type of thing, but there was enough hints and stuff that came out before the episode. If you paid attention, you knew that there was going to be a shark in it, and it was going to be a Christmas Carol meets Jaws. But I'm just glad it wasn't sort of like just the shark terrorizing them every minute. It was done differently, which I liked. It wasn't what I was expecting. So
one of the other things was
It was an off-world adventure, but all their Christmas Eve adventures that they went on all seemed to be Earth-based. So even though this took place on another planet, it seemed like if you look at the photographs that Karazhan's looking at, you know, his new memories that are being formed, and he's looking at all these photographs of these Christmas Eve adventures, they're all taking place on Earth. There's a scene in front of the pyramids, the Statue of Liberty, obviously Hollywood in 1952. And that's another thing where the Doctor finally seems to have met Frank Sinatra. And that was something that Matt Smith had always said he would like to have a story with Frank Sinatra in it. And so he got his wish there, sort of.
And Einstein and Marilyn Monroe. What a night.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it's a good story. It was a good episode. I was just nitpicking before, and I was just trying to get those out of the way. But if we can turn a blind eye to that, I guess we can just enjoy it for what it is. It's supposed to be a Christmas fair, and I guess it pulls that off. I thought there's some nice foreshadowing there in the beginning. Karazhan feels his cheek. And he was remembering back to his childhood being tormented by his father. And then again, we see that again with young Karazhan. I just thought they handled that very well. The fish effects, I thought, were done excellent. You know, I'm talking about besides the shark, the smaller fish, I think were done wonderfully.
What about the timing? I thought it was at 60 minutes. It was a good time.
I think it didn't. The pacing was good. It flowed very well. I didn't think it dragged at any moment. I think it kept up the pacing. And like I said, I thought it was clever because it got to the point where if anyone that's seen A Christmas Carol and all the different versions of it, you just start to know, okay, well, now we're going to see Christmas future. And I just like the way they changed that. They had in a way. I just thought that was done very well. It's a time story once again, very much like Blink, you know, Stephen Moffat's. Since Doctor Who's a show about time travel, there's not many episodes themselves that deal with time travels within, you know, traveling within time in the episode itself. So this is similar, where there's a lot of time traveling going on within the episode itself. So that's always a nice topic to visit, or a nice theme to visit there.
And there were still the quiet moments, you know, when the girl was singing and, you know, like the fish were biting the back of the Doctor. You think, what's that about? And the young boy says, the fish wants it.
Yeah, that was a nice moment there, a nice play. You know, and that's the other thing is that, you know, this Doctor is very childlike, and he got along very well with young Karazhan. The dialogue about, okay, we are boys, and what do we do when we're faced with danger and all that? You know, it was very much, you know, the Doctor is very much a young child. He always had this like childlike curiosity, and I think that's even like he was distracted by the Christmas tree. Like they're running, you know, through the room, like, oh, a Christmas tree, and he runs up to it, and he's like so excited about it. And I think that, you know, Matt Smith does a wonderful job with that. It's sort of, you know, again, it's sort of like almost like a throwback to the Second Doctor, where sometimes the Second Doctor would put up those ruses of being, you know, just being a little, you know, character onto himself and not really revealing his intelligence. And just like when he sees the weather machine, whatever that device is called, and he goes, oh, it's a big thing with lights and buttons, and it was just drawing me to it and all that. And again, it's very much that childlike curiosity of him, and I think Matt Smith does a wonderful job with it. All right, well, let's get other people on board here. And before that, let's just play another clip, and then we're going to get on with getting some live feedback here. Once again, Dr. Hugh Potchock supporting subscribers will get bumped up on the queue there. With Gallifrey 22 less than 2 months away, we want to bring our live show there once again and do all the extensive coverage that we do at the annual show, as we've been doing. But we need your help to do that. You can help by becoming a Potchock supporting subscriber. Please, if you haven't already become a show supporter, please consider becoming one. Now more than ever, we need your support. Not only will you be supporting the show and helping us return to Gallifrey to cover the convention there, but you'll also be getting extra content as well, such as the Doctor Who Potchock Extra episodes and other advantages that we offer supporting subscribers. Now, to learn how to become a Potchock supporting subscriber, simply go to potchock.net or arttrap.com and click on the banner towards the top of the page in regards to becoming a supporter. A big thank you for all our supporters, especially during this holiday season where we do want to give thanks to everyone that helped support the show. We really can't do the show without you, so thank you so much.
Why are you recording this?
Do you pay attention at school, Catherine?
Sorry, what?
Because you're not paying attention now.
Now I remember. Now, Dr. Amos!
Doctor, are you sure?
Trust me.
Okay.
Oi, eyes on the top. Look at me. I wear it and I don't care. Trust me.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why it's cool. Hello, fishy. Let's see. Interesting. Crystalline fog, eh? Maybe carrying a tiny electrical charge. Is that how you fly, little fishy?
What is it? What kind? Can I see?
Just stay there a moment.
Is it big?
Nah. Just a little one. So, little fella, what do you eat?
How little? Can I come out?
No, no. Maybe just wait there for a moment.
Oh, what colour is it?
Big. Big colour.
What's happening?
Well, concentrating on the pluses, you've definitely got a story of your own now. Also, I got a good look at the fish, and I think I understand how the fog works, which is going to help me land a spaceship in the future and save a lot of lives. And I better get some very interesting readings off my sonic screwdriver when I get it back from the shark in your bedroom.
There's a shark in my bedroom.
Oh, fine. Focus on that.
All right, well, first up, I believe, will be Perry. Perry, are you there?
I think so.
Hey, how you doing? Happy holidays.
Hi, Louis. How are you?
Very good.
Well, good to be on here. I think it's the first time on one of the live chats where I've done this. So,
well, welcome aboard. We're very happy to have you on board live with us. Oh, wait a minute. This is Memorex. I pre-recorded this at 3 o'clock.
That's right. Okay.
So don't go off your script. Otherwise, I won't be able to respond.
Okay.
Yeah, it was big, wasn't it? See, that's what happened. Okay, now I'm confusing you. I'll just shut up and let me ask you what you thought about A Christmas Carol.
Well, I enjoyed it very much at the time watching it. I guess I agree with everything you guys have been saying about it, and I guess I didn't think of some of those things that you mentioned, such as, you know, why would the doctor just put her back into the freezer every year? Why wouldn't he try to keep her out and to help her?
Yeah, it just didn't make sense to me. It just seemed out of character for him. And even watching it the second time, it just seemed a little, you know, I don't know. I thought maybe the first time you missed something, and maybe you, when you go back and watch it the second time, you're like, oh, I'll catch why he's doing that now. But even the second time, I didn't understand why he was doing it.
Yeah, he did even mention the numbers. You know, he pointed them out.
Yeah, and then he got distracted, and then he never went back to it. And it just, you would think that by the time I don't understand why he would just stick her back in the freezer.
Yeah, I don't understand why he didn't make more of an effort to release all of those frozen people. The so-called circle population, that they called him, right?
Like I said, I thought maybe once he turns Kazan, I always have problems saying his name, Kazan around, maybe he would think that he would just free them all when he has a change of heart. Maybe that was his thinking. But her, she was already out. Why put her back in? You know, without knowing that she only has 8 days to live, or after the first day, 7 days, he doesn't know that, so why stick her back in?
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all. And I did really enjoy the episode. I think maybe they're having a little bit too much fun with the doctor going back into, you know, the timeline of people he's interacting with, which is kind of contradictory to what, you know, Russell T. Davies would do. Even in the Stephen Moffat story, The Girl in the Fireplace, I just watched it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Where he says, you know, Rose says, let's use the TARDIS to go back to France. And he says, no, we can't do that. We're already part of events. But in this one, he doesn't do that. You know, he doesn't have any qualms about going back into Kazran's timeline and changing him, and therefore changing his own, you know, events. So that part of it, I think, maybe was a little bit inconsistent. It may just be, you know, Stephen Moffat's, you know, take on the Doctor and time travel. But like I said, it was really fun, and I really enjoyed the whole thing. I thought, like you said, the guest stars were excellent.
Yeah, I think Stephen Moffat had made a mention that on Doctor Who Confidential, that, you know, pointing out that the Doctor's always breaking his own rules when it comes to getting involved and interfering with established time lines.
Yeah.
He's constantly breaking that himself, so he just figured that he'll, you know, kind of go off and do that all on this episode.
The other thing that I didn't notice so much, but then I saw it pointed out on the internet afterwards, was that the song that Abigail sings at the end to calm, you know, the skies down for the ship to land,
mm-hmm.
She sings about silence. That's what the song is about.
Yeah, I was trying to discern what the song was about, especially, you know, the second time hearing it, and I picked up that it was about silence, and, you know, and I was thinking like Silent Night and all that, but...
Well, I think what I saw somebody else had written was silence is all around you, silence is all you know, or all you will know. I didn't quite make it out either, but
or maybe they trying to connect into the whole, you know, well, next year's theme and this past series, you know, silence will fall.
Yeah.
Because weren't the choir wasn't the Christmas carol that was being sung outside the, you know, via the hologram, wasn't that Silent Night?
It was Silent Night. Yeah. Yeah, so there were a lot of interesting references, and even references to the original Christmas Carol in there. Like I said, you know, about mentioning the surplus population and things like that, you know, things that Scrooge would have said. And
well, I'm glad he didn't say Bah Humbug.
Bah Humbug, yeah. Yeah, that's true, that's true. There was no Tiny Tim, really, but in here as well. But overall, I thought it was a really fun episode, and... I liked it better than, you know, some of the past Christmas specials, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot in it, and it may have been a little confusing, but it was definitely fun, and I definitely was surprised at the scene you and Dave have already mentioned about showing him his future, showing Kazran his future, and saying, I already am. And
yeah, I thought they did that very well.
Yeah. Yeah, me as well. I didn't have a whole lot to say besides that. I just wanted to...
Were there anything that you had problems with? Other than what we already mentioned?
No, I thought maybe the fish were a little hard to believe at first. And there were some silly parts in it, but like you said, it was meant to be a holiday romp. And riding the shark, so to speak, you know, was definitely kind of silly.
Yeah, yeah. Well...
Fun. And the Doctor not really trying to save Abigail's life in some way, I think, was a little bit out of character.
Yeah, well, unless it was done off, you know, off camera, off scene, you know, a scene that we didn't see on screen, he
yeah.
didn't really investigate what was wrong with her. Maybe it was something that he could fix, you know.
Yeah, right, for sure. And the part about marrying Marilyn Monroe and things like that, I think, were a little unnecessary. But like I said, fun.
Yeah, I think they were just having a laugh.
Just going on Abigail's health, isn't the one point when she finds out is the Doctor says, oh, were you one of my doctors? So she's obviously hoping that that might be one of the things that happens.
Yeah, I thought that was a big hint, you know, that something was going to happen and the Doctor would ask about that.
And also it's been in text that they may put Abigail, also I bet Abigail didn't want his family to suffer for the Doctor letting out permanently. And
yeah.
What's the other one?
Well, the thing is, though, that's...
Guest four.
Well, initially he was going back there just to change Kazarn's heart, whatever. You know, I don't think his original intent was to go there for every Christmas Eve, and it just, you know, young Kazarn,
the boy,
yeah, talked him into it. So, for all the Doctor knows, that he was just going to be back there for, you know, a day, you know, whatever. I don't know. I mean, maybe that is, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah,
I mean, as I say, I think Stephen Moffat ties up a lot more loose ends than many other writers do.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a deal breaker. It's not like I can't enjoy the episode because of it. It just kind of just sticks out there a bit. It's like, okay, goodbye. Yeah, I'm putting you back in the freezer. it was a wonderful day with you, but, you know, you got to go back in the freezer.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe the doctor knew that something would happen to Abigail's family if she wasn't, you know, kept in the freezer. But I might have thought he would have done a little bit more to find a way to get the people out.
Well, exactly. It just seems a little out of character for him.
Maybe could have confronted Kazran's father in some way to have tried to save those people. It almost seemed like the antagonist went from being Kazran himself to being Kazran's father, but Kazran's father never directly interacted with the doctor or anyone.
Yeah, this is true. All right, well, thank you.
All right, well, thank you,
Perry.
Thank you, Perry.
And
yeah, thanks, guys.
Look forward. Go ahead.
I didn't know if we wanted to talk about the Series 6 trailer.
Oh, did you have any comments about that? Yeah, sure.
Well, I noticed some really interesting and familiar-looking scenes in the trailer, and the one that I wanted to point out was it looks like the console room from the TARDIS from The Lodger was in there.
Yes, yeah.
If you look at, if you go to go to 31 seconds into the trailer, you can see what looks like that console room from The Lodger. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there's also an Ood in there, and which is kind of surprising because it was said that this next series we're not going to have any returning, what they called monsters, or I don't know if you want to call the Ood as one of them.
Yeah, I mean, and it all looks very exciting, very interesting. Some interesting shots of River Song in there, as well as the Doctor with the beard chained up in Area 51, things like that.
Yeah, there's some scenes there with Amy Pond with markings on her face, and then there's a scene with River had markings, and there's another scene where she's not wearing much at all.
Yeah. That's right.
Yes, I think Ian, the Sixth Doctor, might like that clip.
I thought that too. I actually posted that earlier on Facebook. I said this will be his next avatar.
Yeah, well, Stensons are cool.
Stensons are cool, yeah. Okay, well, that's about all I wanted to say. And I want to thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
You too. Thank you. Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
Cheers. I also wondered whether that was TARDIS Tara's Stetson as well.
She does have one, but that wasn't hers. Well, we have more people waiting in the queue to talk about A Christmas Carol. We're going to get to them in just a moment. Right now, I'm being trampled by a holiday blizzard coming through the area here, and I'm literally getting snowed in where I can't even open the door. One good thing about being snowed in, we can always entertain yourself by listening to podcasts as well as audiobooks, and one of the great sources for great audiobooks is Audible. Audible is the leading provider of digital audiobooks. They have over 75,000 titles to choose from in their library, which includes every genre, be it thrillers, business, history, and of course, science fiction and fantasy, and that includes Doctor Who. Audible content is compatible with iPods and iPhones and iPads and, well, just about any MP3 player. With over 500 listening devices for your listening pleasure anytime, anywhere, just like this podcast. Now, for you, listeners of Doctor Who Podshock, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. To download your free audiobook, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap, ARTTRAP, for your free audiobook. And as always, we would like to make a possible recommendation for that free book, or you can choose anything that you like, but we like to kind of peruse what's new in Doctor Who. And one of the newest titles available is the continuation of the ongoing series, Doctor Who Demon Quest, and this is Chapter 5, Sepulchre. Don't ask me to say that 10 times fast. It's a story written by Paul Mars with Tom Baker and Susan Jameson and Richard Franklin as Mike Yates. This is Chapter 5, and I believe this concludes this story, if I'm not mistaken.
So that was how the last part of our quest began, in the innocuous environs of Nest Cottage. How long our journey took, I don't even know. The passage of time isn't always distinct aboard the TARDIS. We were travelling clear across the universe, into another time completely, guided by the two halves of a mysterious golden heart. Hello there! The Doctor went striding about as if he hadn't a care in the world. I followed a little more hesitantly, stepping from the TARDIS into our new environment. We were in a large drawing room, of the kind that might have belonged to an old and faded English stately home. It was rather dowdy and poorly lit, but there was no mistaking its faded grandeur. All the same, after journeying so far, we both expected something less prosaic.
According to the TARDIS, this is Sepulchre. Silly name.
It gives me the shivers.
I think that's the idea. The whole thing reeks of melodrama.
Probably some home county's pile, I'd say.
We're not in England anymore, Captain. Take a close look at those paintings on the wall. They're not surrealist pieces, Mike. They depict life in another dimension. This room may pay lip service to human culture, but the devil is in the detail. Yet someone clearly wants to make us feel at home. Ah, good evening.
What?
We've got company.
Good heavens, Mrs. Whimsy! Pushing a hostess trolley.
Oh, we're tremendously glad to see you, my dear. Mike and I were determined to find you.
Yes. You took your time, though, didn't you?
Well, we came as soon as we got that message of yours.
I've been waiting for weeks in this place.
Time slippage. That's what happens when your spatial geometer is tampered with.
Will you have some tea and cake?
Shouldn't we just get back in the TARDIS and go?
Well, not a lot of point in that, Mike. The old stick's hardly herself, is she? Let's humour her for a while.
As we sat at a highly polished table and Mrs. Whimsy set the tea things out, I realised the Doctor was right. There was something odder than usual about his housekeeper, beyond simply being put out that we had kept her waiting.
Demon Quest number 5. How cool is that? Tom Baker reprising his role as the Fourth Doctor. Once again, you can choose that or any that Audible has to offer for your free audiobook. Simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap, A-R-T-T-R-A-P, for your free audiobook. And if you're driving or you just can't write down that URL for some reason, simply go to our website, either arttrap.com or podshock.net, and you can get the link there for the promo offer.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
You didn't think this was over, did you? I'm the ghost of Christmas Present.
A ghost? Just like that?
Eyes off the skirt.
You turn into a Roman.
Yeah, I do that. I also do this.
Do what? What are you talking about?
Projections like me.
Who are they?
The people on the ship up there, the ones that you're going to let die tonight.
Why are they singing?
For their lives. Which one's Abigail? The Doctor told me.
Did he know?
Well, he doesn't hold back, you know, the Doctor.
How do I? I never met him before tonight. No, I seem to have known him all my life. How? Why?
You're the only person who can let that ship land. He was trying to turn you into a nicer person. But he was trying to do it nicely.
He's changed my past my whole life.
To Time can be rewritten.
You tell the doctor. Tell him from me. People count.
Wow. He's an excellent voice. You can't really ask for anyone better than that.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Michael Gambon.
Gambon.
Gonna have him on the show, and he'll sing this gold ring.
Yeah, he's 70 now, born in 1940.
All right, well, let's get other people on the queue. You're echoing again, Dave. I didn't want to interrupt Perry's call there before, but we're getting some feedback from you.
Okay, I'll try and mute.
All right, next up in the queue, I believe, is Mr. Darth Skeptical. Hello, Darth. Happy holidays.
Hello. How are you, sir?
Very good.
Indeed. Well, you know, I have to say, I love this episode. Like, in a really big, fundamental way. In a way I haven't really liked Stephen Moffat's writing throughout most of Series 5. This transported me, which is what I expect out of Doctor Who. I expect it to take me to another world, another time, somehow another place, and I think that this did so in quite a good way. And I haven't been as moved by a Stephen Moffat script since, you know, Blink, mm-hmm. since the scene between Sally Shipton and, Sally and the older Billy Shipton, which, you know, still makes me cry when I see it. This had that same sort of effect on me, and I wasn't expecting to like this at all, really, because it has some elements that I don't like in Christmas stories, namely A Christmas Carol itself, which is a story I just don't like. But at the end of the day, I don't think that this ended up being much about the Christmas Carol. Instead, I think it was more about the story of Susan in the Chronicles of Narnia, and how at the end of that series, she has really turned her back on Aslan. And I think that there was very much that same sort of moment in this play, where, you know, you have Kazran literally turning his back on the Doctor and walking away and saying, don't come back, don't ever come back, and finding ultimately the redemption that would flow from that. I just thought it was a lovely story, and I don't think it's actually quite as Christmas Carol-y as it could well have been. I think, you know, on the scale of Christmas stories, it's maybe, you know, it's, you could argue that it's the best. You could, I have a great deal of sentimental attachment to Christmas Invasion, because, of course, that's not just a Christmas story. It's also the first story of a new Doctor, so it's a regeneration story. So that gives it a little bump up in my mind. But this is a solid, solid entry, and better than what we've gotten for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. Well, it's not better than last year, I guess, because that was, you know, fundamentally about regeneration as well. But it's better than Next Doctor. It's better than Victory of, or Voyage of the Damned, clearly. So that's really good. I think it's also an important story in terms of the backstage development of the series, because it's weird. If you look at it, this is actually a fundamental sea change in the people who are working for Doctor Who, much bigger than what we got at 11th Hour, although you'd think 11th Hour was, you know, oh, it's a new regime. But really, they kept a lot of people in place, especially below the level of department head. They kept a ton of people. But this one, you know, it's got a brand new producer. It's got a brand new production designer. It's got, the BBC Wales debut of Barbara Kidd is the costume designer. It's got a brand new editor. So those are big positions, mm-hmm. four big positions, which are totally brand new. And I think that you really see that. You also, you know, there are at least 20 different new names on the credits list, mm-hmm. too. So, I mean, even at sub-department level, sub-department head, massive changeover. And you really do see it. I mean, this is phenomenally well-designed production. It does not look like anything else that has come before, I think, in Doctor Who.
Yeah, no, I think the production-wise, it was outstanding. And if you see The Confidential, there's a lot more that went into the production that it wasn't even apparent on screen, but it's just the details were there, and it's just, somehow at Renaissance, it just comes out somehow, just even if it's not even seen.
Right. I mean, just it really is something that is texturally very different than what's gone before. And, a lot of that, beyond being accredited to Pickwode, who's the incoming production designer, and Kidd, who the costumes in this thing, phenomenal. But a lot of it really is down to Stephen Pearson, who basically is new. I mean, the only thing he's done for us before was Big Bang and Pandorica Opens. But there really is something magical, I think, about this Toby Haynes, Stephen Pearson, Pickwode Kidd thing that's going on. I mean, it really is producing some of the most striking images. And I hope that we're going to see more of them. I hope that, although this last series we saw the directors of photography changing almost every story, I hope that doesn't happen now for the next series. I really hope it's just go with Stephen Pearson, because he's just outrageously good at lighting Doctor Who.
Yeah, the lighting here was outstanding.
Yeah, just ridiculously good. I'm very surprised that you're not quite happy with this being an off-Earth story, because it's 100% off-Earth, really, except for tying down.
No, I don't have a problem with it. I was just commenting that the Christmas Eve adventures took place on Earth, where this was not on Earth. You would think that there might have been one thrown in there where it's just like a planet that we haven't seen before or something.
I guess it's not
a deal breaker. It's just an observation I made.
I guess I just thought of that as being the reverse. Since these people are not from Earth, for them, going to Earth would be a treat.
But when you have a TARDIS where you can go anywhere, anytime.
Anywhere in the world, yeah, sure.
You think that at least one year they'll do an off, go somewhere else outside of Earth.
I suppose. For me, what the whole thing was, from the establishing shot, the pre-title sequence, it really did feel like the entire time I was somewhere new and different.
But what they did was that even though it was off-world, it was on another planet, another time, they still captured that Dickens feel of, of the industrial age there with the nitty-gritty, and it's just that flavor was there, even though it was unearthly.
That's true, yeah. I mean, it's the most steampunk episode we've ever had, and that's inherent in every design detail.
Even the camera, that when Karazhan pulls out that camera, it's, first of all, it's not square or rectangle, it's round, and that lens that comes out, it's just magnificent.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, Pickwode, this is a guy who's been around. He was doing stuff back when John Pertwee was still the Doctor. So he's going to give us, I think, a lot of really good stuff going forward. I love the design element of it. But the story thing, one of the reasons that I like listening to Big Finish audio is because you can do things in audio that you can't really do in television. And one of my favorite stories is this story called Orbis, which is a Paul McGann thing. And it posits a world which is basically inhabited by shellfish and jellyfish. Mm-hmm. And, it's very aquatic. And I love that story because of the imagery that's involved. And that's one of the things that made me go for this story. And the whole thing of, wow, I'm actually getting a depiction of flying fish was just wondrous. And I loved everything about that. Another thing that I think was great for me about this particular story was it's taken me a long time to sort of fully warm up to Matt Smith. And not think at certain points, oh, he's misreading that line or not quite hitting it on the nail. And I was so totally with him the entire time. And I thought he was marvelously bonkers in a way that I thought before he'd been trying to get to, but sometimes it just fell flat. I think this entire time I was just in awe of him in this one. And I think it's because, you know, Moffat's now writing more for him instead of just writing for a generic doctor as he might have been doing at the very beginning of series 5.
Yeah, because he had written this after he had completed the first series of Matt Smith.
Right, and so therefore had a much more better understanding of what his actor could do. And even Amy, I thought, in this thing was, even though she's only here for 8 minutes or whatever, I thought she was way better than she was during most of Series 5. I mean, she was consistently interesting to look at. Her comedy was working for me in a way that it sometimes didn't in Series 5. So I loved the whole flow through there. Now, as to some of the things that you've talked about, you know, this notion that the doctor should have gone and, I don't know, saved these people who were cryogenically frozen, or at least saved our principal heroine. I think that the script covers why, and I think that the production design also covers why. Because if you look, every single one of those chambers has a countdown device on it. So what's the doctor supposed to do? Save all of them? I mean, is he really supposed to go around and figure out, you know, what is your particular medical problem? How can
the doctor
now
doesn't
fix
know
your medical problem?
The doctor doesn't know what those numbers mean.
Well, exactly. But then I think we find at the very end of the episode that he says, look, you know, sometimes people die.
No, that is understandable. It just it doesn't seem to be in his character to throw her back in the freezer without at least first finding out what's going on with her. And it just seemed a little like, okay, well, it's time for you to go back in your freezer. It doctor-like.
I think it does in the light of an episode like, say, School Reunion, where clearly the theme is, look, you could go back and save people, you could go do things, but sometimes, you know, people do need to die. It is a part of the way.
But
that
he didn't know she was
unfold.
Dying at that point. At that time, he didn't know she was dying, and neither did Kazan at that time either. Because she had to break the news to him later on in 1952, when, you know, that scene, you know, in Hollywood, that's when she broke the news to him.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, the question is, does he ever actually see the number tick over?
Well, you would think the doctor being very observant, he would, but he doesn't.
Yeah, in text, she told him to keep her in there. So...
The what now?
The seventh doctor in text, who's not on audio, said she told him to keep her in there. Presumably, she told him to return him to the ice coffin.
Oh, that's true too. But I mean, I think I don't know. As far as the number thing, I don't think there's ever a point in the whole play where it's, you know, clear to the doctor that those numbers are kicking over, and so therefore they have a meaning outside of just being the number of the box. So I don't think that there's, you know, there's not a cause for him to be suspicious about the numbers. I don't think.
Well, he got curious about him. He asked her about what those numbers mean, and she said they pertains to, you know, the person inside. And then he got distracted. Amy called or something like that, and you know, that was the end of that.
Yeah, my first thoughts about that number was when I first saw. I thought 5 days left the family have to pay her debts, and if they haven't paid her debts by the zero, they switch the machine off. So that was like when the debt was finally due, you know, payable. But that was just me watching the show.
I get that was a possibility. I mean, I didn't know what it was either, but that was a possibility as well. It didn't seem like it was just that big a deal. I mean, I think it's covered in the script why he didn't fix all those people, why he didn't release all the people.
It just goes against the theme that was prevalent here, you know, which is, you know, is that everyone is important, you know, because, you know, when we first see her there, Kazan, the older Kazan says that, you know, it's nobody important, or and then he, you know, he revisits that with young Kazon. Is it somebody important? You know, and evidently, yeah. It just seems to go, you know, against that whole theme of that everyone is important, yet not important enough to take, you know, keep him out of the freezer.
I suppose, but I mean, somehow the Doctor has to draw a line in the sand somewhere. He has to say, you know, there is a point at which whatever adventure I'm on right now, whatever good I could do in this world has to be limited in scope in some way, or else he would never leave any particular planet, because there's always people to save.
Yeah, well, I'm not
saying
he should.
He had
to save everyone there, but this one was already out of the freezer, so it just seemed a little bit out of character for him to stick her back in the freezer without knowing, you know, why she only had a few days left, you know, and it just.
Just knowing Stephen Moffat's, you know, meticulous approach, I bet if I'm sure people have watched it a few times already, but on rewatching, there'll probably be a clue in the narration there somewhere or in the dialogue.
I wouldn't hope for that. Stephen Moffat's meticulous nature is well overrated. But I mean, I don't know. It's interesting to hear this whole discussion, because it never even occurred to me that there was anything even slightly wrong. I mean, I was actually quite happy that for me, almost every point made sense, which is not something that I've associated with Series 5. So I was glad to have it, you know, just unfold in front of me and for me to be transported by it and that sort of be the end of it.
Yeah, I think that was the intent of it. You know, I was just nitpicking and just, it didn't destroy the episode for me. It just seemed a little, it was just a little bump in the road there, that's all.
Well, I tell you another thing I really liked about this was the slight change in the Doctor's costume and makeup, which is to say, I hate that red shirt, that red striped shirt from the red and gray thing from last year. This new approach of this white and cream, lightly cream striped thing, I think that does wonders. I think it just looks sharper. It looks snappier. It looks like, oh, this guy is actually the hero of the thing. And I think that the attention that, you know, Barbara Southcott is now taking with his hair, so that his hair actually looks manicured, I like that more. I know that there's some people who are really against that, but you can see that in the trailer and you can see that in this episode. And I think you can see it, you know, going back to Death of the Doctor, you can see, okay, they are really trying to keep his hair clean and straight and neat. And I think he just looks better. I think he looks much more like a hero and much more in control. And I love this look, and I think it's going to be fine going forward.
Can I be cynical on that? Is that not
sure.
So that when they bring out his games, he looks a bit more like his avatar? That's notoriously difficult to do in games.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's probably true.
There's that one scene where they're in the covert where you see the projection of him on the wall. It's, you know, the camera recorded image of him and young Kazon in the covert, and he gets up and he goes to the door, and it looks like he's, at one point it's just an optical illusion there, but it looks like he was wearing leather pants. I'm like, the Doctor's wearing leather pants? And he comes out of the covert, he's not wearing leather pants, but it's just the way the light was hitting it, and it's I'm just glad they changed it. You know, I just hate when the Doctor is in a uniform and every, you know, episode, every adventure that he's wearing the same exact clothes. So anytime they change it, even though it's subtle, I enjoy it.
Yeah. And it's realistic because, I mean, for me, one of the problems I had with the Big Bang was that if you've reset the universe and you didn't, I think that it means that the 11th hour didn't happen, which means that he couldn't have gone into the hospital to get the clothes. But I think what this says is he's now gone into the TARDIS or somewhere else and gotten something else that looks like what he got on Earth before. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same thing. So to me, unless they change it in next season at some point, he's back in the same old stuff again. I think it makes it just look like, okay, he's now gone from something he borrowed to something that he's gone out and shopped for and, you know, really taken on board. So.
Oh, can I jump in here too? You're talking about his clothes. What about props? His psychic caper didn't seem to work. He said it shorted. So do we think we're going to lose that in the next series? And, of course, his sonic screwdriver was broken in half. Are we going to have a new sonic screwdriver as well?
Well, I think the psychic paper thing was just a gag, which is a lovely gag, you know, because he says, wow, that's one lie too far, which, you know, I don't think it's permanently sorted out. The sonic screwdriver, that's, you know, anybody's guess. It might get replaced. Who knows?
They can sell a new toy if it gets a redesign.
Yeah.
Sell a new toy. They'll have the broken one for sale as well.
Well, yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Any comments about the trailer, Darth?
Oh, the trailer. Yeah, everything about it I loved. I'm a little curious, though, about the Oval Office scene. I mean, it's got to be the Oval Office, doesn't it? Because that's not the Resolute desk. That is, in other words, that's not the desk that has been used for quite some time.
Well, this is supposed to take place in the past, though. Isn't this like
in the 1960s, apparently. Okay. But the Resolute desk gets refurbished by Jackie Onassis, and then Johnson says, well, I'm going to get rid of that desk, you know, because of the association with Kennedy. And it stays away, but it's not the desk that Johnson or Nixon used either. So I don't know what that means. Maybe they just didn't do their homework well enough. But it was very clearly, obviously, not a desk that was used by any president. So that's a little weird for me. But I still love the line. Oh, my God, the line is just beautiful.
It's probably the master's TARDIS, not desk.
Who knows? But yeah, I mean, all that stuff in Utah just looks fabulous, doesn't it? I mean, just gorgeous filmmaking there. This is for me probably the most exciting sort of trailer since the non-trailer, I guess, of the Ninth Doctor, the very first trailer that we got, where he's, you know, running down the hallway and the explosion's following him.
And to my understanding, this is only really mostly covering the first couple episodes of the new series. So, you know,
right?
It's
and maybe that's why it's a better thing, because, you know, there was a similar sort of short trailer. Actually, you know, most of the RTD trailers are short. Most of them are only about the first five episodes, maybe.
Yeah, if you know that much.
But still, I think this is most analogous to that mid-season trailer from Series 3 where, you know, it's just, they only had like three stories, I think, in that. And they only had Human Nature and the Utopia thing and the 42. And so because you're talking about, you know, three limited stories, you can put together a more compelling sort of narrative. And I think that's why this one works. It's not about the whole thing.
And
it's
the other
just
factor
about,
is that next year it's broken up into two series anyway, so it's going to be six and seven, you know, parts, you know, whatever, segments.
Exactly, but I mean, I think it makes it easier to advertise because you're
more focused on a limited amount of stories than being all over the place.
And the thing that I absolutely adored is that there is not one image of anything, of any alien, any enemy that we've ever seen before, except for this Ood, and the Ood was a surprise, and the Ood doesn't even look like an Ood. I mean, what you're left wondering, what the hell is the green eye about? That's never happened before. So
it could turn out that it's not an Ood. It could be just something trying to simulate an Ood, or it's, you know, until we see it, we don't know.
Sure,
because
maybe it could. But the beauty of the trailer to me is that there's nothing familiar about it. Everything is gorgeously new, and I love that.
Yeah, definitely. So. All right.
Well, I suppose we should move on to other people.
Well, thank you again, Darth.
If you're wondering,
happy holidays, and glad you're
and to you
joined us again. I'm sorry for technical fits, snafus.
I think he wants to give it a rating.
Yes, please. Oh, we haven't been doing that. So.
I mean, it's a five. So there you go.
All right. Okay, cheers, Dave. I mean, Darth.
That's okay.
All right. Next in the queue is Kyle. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, you're on.
You there? Kyle?
Hello?
Yeah, we can't hear you.
Yeah,
All right, we're going to go on to Tim, and then we're going to come back to you, Kyle, and hopefully we'll get your audio. For some reason, we're not hearing you. this show's been plagued with technical snafus.
And hopefully Tim's still awake.
Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Tim.
He's snoring away. Happy New Year, Tim! Maybe he's not kidding. Maybe he really is asleep.
It's after his bedtime, you know.
Tim, are you really sleeping?
Yeah,
I'm still in the land of wake, just about.
Wakey, wakey, it's Christmas.
Yeah, I'm here. Wakey, wakey, it's Christmas, yeah.
Well, down the Red Bull.
Well, I haven't drunk anything for hours. I'm a bit dry here.
Yeah, same here.
Well, on the whole, quite a good episode. Although, I appear to be against the consensus of people I've read on the internet who seem to think it's the best Christmas special yet. Several plus points in its favour, though. It was wonderfully well designed. The look of the whole thing was beautiful, mm-hmm. wonderfully well lit, and the whole design throughout was brilliant. The casting and acting throughout also was brilliant, and Michael Gambon has to be given special mention. And Catherine Jenkins, for someone who'd never acted before...
You would never know it from this episode.
You got a damn good acting performance out of her. I think they have this... they seem to have an art on Doctor Who of picking directors who are able to take people who maybe have talents in that direction but have never used them and are able to exploit them. And they did it with the 11th Hour, and they were able to do it here. As for the story itself, and Dave said this when we were recording Coldham Collective earlier, it didn't quite grab him. And I know I had that problem too. I mean, it was a good watch. It was very inventively written. But it just for some reason didn't grab me. I watched it again this evening, and it was a better watch second time round, but I think it's that thing of your expectations are lowered once you actually know what you're going to watch. But on the whole, a good watch. But I think the word I'd use is grim for Christmas. You build up this well of expectation for a Doctor Who episode when you haven't had one since the summer. And I kind of like wanted something a bit more upbeat to leave us a bit happier before there were some nice gags in it, yeah, but the overall feeling was that one of the central characters was maybe not on screen but was going to die at the end.
Yeah.
And worse still, the Doctor caused it.
Well, I don't think the Doctor caused it. I think she was going to die before the Doctor got there. It's just that he used up those remaining days, but they lived life to the fullest those remaining days. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think Tim's reminding me of something that was why I wasn't totally at ease with it, and Darth's going to hate me for this, but part of it reminded me a bit about Voyage of the Damned, because basically, you know, you got a ship crashing, like Voyage of the Damned, and you had the baddie of the piece saying he doesn't care. Well, that's exactly what the chap said on the Voyage of the Damned. The fact that he was crushing this thing and all these people were going to die, he didn't care. He was getting his own back on the corporation. Mm-hmm. And the fact that all these people were going to die in the crash didn't bother him. So that was a bit annoying to sort of have that little reminder jogged in your back of your mind. But I thought that absolutely was excellent. The acting was excellent. The singing, the lighting. I couldn't fault in a way, other than the fact that I'd rather not have Christmas specials. I'd rather have two more episodes of Doctor Who. But that's my broken record again.
Mm-hmm. Well, about the only other thing to add is that And someone, I can't remember who, but somebody mentioned this in chat over on the Colton Collective, is that plot-wise, it's also similar to a Torchwood episode called To the Last Man, in which I'm trying to remember the Oriental character's name in Torchwood.
You mean the Asian...
The Asian character,
Toshi? Something like that.
Tosh is the short name for her. And they have an episode of Torchwood in which there's this soldier from the 1940s, and they've sort of held him in storage, mm-hmm. and
yeah, now I remember it.
They have to wake him up one day, and they wake him up one day a year just to make sure he's all right. And he always spends that day with Tosh.
Yeah.
And so you get
now. I remember it now. That
two people falling in love who only see each other once a year,
mm-hmm.
and on that level, it was a direct lift. It's the exact same thing.
I didn't think of it until you just brought it up. But yeah, okay, I can see that now.
But are we gathering TARDIS groans?
Sure, group? Yeah. I think Dave and I failed to give our groans, but Doth gave his, and...
Doth gave his, and...
And I didn't ask Perry for his,
but...
I'm about 3 out of 5 at my end.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a 3.5 from me.
All right, very good. I probably would give it maybe 4 out of 5 or 4.5. I mean, for a Christmas special, it's...
Yeah.
Oh, if you're going to rate it against the Christmas specials, I'd probably 4.5 out of 5. Mm-hmm.
Well, the best thing to compare it to is other Christmas specials.
Yeah, indeed.
But equally, it's hard to make that comparison because so much has changed with the show since we last had a Christmas special. So it may be one of these things that gets reassessed in 2 or 3 years' time when Stephen Moffat's... made a few more Christmas specials.
Yeah, I mean, we can have some Doctor Who specials on Christmas Day that don't relate to Christmas either. I mean, obviously you can't do that with a story called A Christmas Carol, but this is going to be obviously a Christmas-oriented one, but it doesn't necessarily mean that every Christmas special has to be about Christmas.
Yeah, let's have these guys out of this system now.
Well, we've gone 40-some-odd years of Doctor Who with just an occasional mention of Christmas, maybe once or twice, and now it's every year.
Well, one thing that was refreshingly different about it is that the Russell T. Davis ones were all set on Earth, and always Earth was under some kind of threat.
Yes.
And it was good to see a Doctor Who story for Christmas on Earth. They had met plenty of Earth references in it, but it wasn't actually set on Earth.
There was no big giant star coming down from the sky, threatening Earth. Yes, no, that's a welcome change. All right, Tim, we're going to try to get Kyle back on, and I'm going to try to be able to speak once again after I get the show done.
Well, it's gone midnight, so I think I'm going to drop off and actually try to drop off.
Well,
if you see what I mean.
Get some sleep then, and thank you for joining us on the show.
Yes,
cheers.
Yeah, cheers, Tim.
But by the time you next do one of these, I'll probably have met you in the flesh because Galley's coming up in February.
Unless Timely Wibbly Wommy takes place and maybe I'm just being silly. Okay, sure. All right, Tim. I'm going to say goodbye. Cheers.
Yep, bye, Lou.
Bye.
And let's try to do this once again with Kyle.
Yes, good afternoon.
Oh, we hear you. Yay.
Brilliant.
Yes, I apologize for it seems like I was having the technical difficulty similar to what everyone else
has. It's been going around today. No need to apologize. It's just...
Absolutely. Well, as everyone said, it was a great episode, perfect Christmas episode. I would have loved to have seen River, but I understand that, we don't want to oversaturate ourselves with too much
River.
Well,
you got to see her in the trailer, at least.
Yes, absolutely. The trailer was actually the best part of it for me, seeing what was coming next year, seeing what was, coming in 2011. I did like The Christmas Carol. It was a classic tale. It had, the the Doctor Who feeling of it. I really liked Matt Smith before. Before this, I was still really into David Tennant, and I really hadn't really grasped Matt Smith yet until I saw him on the episode with Sarah Jane where Joe came back, and then it just kind of clinched for me. Well, this took it one step further and really clinched Matt Smith as the Doctor for me. So it was, to me, it was a great episode. I liked the little bit of Amy and Rory that they put in. I liked how they had them in the outfit. Yeah, in the costumes. That was really good, because if any pictures got leaked, of course, then that would lead to speculation as to why they're dressed like that. So I just thought it was an all-around good episode. Really, really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to watching it again. And that's pretty much it. There's nothing really on there that I didn't like. The only thing that if I had to name something that I didn't like, that would have to be I didn't like that the older version of the, I'm not going to say his, Kazran.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of problems with his name as well for some reason. Kazran, yeah.
Yes, I didn't like the fact that he actually touched his younger
I was thinking that, too, that they were embracing and there was, like, nothing going, you know.
Time jump.
Well, I was expecting, whenever they did that, the same as when Amy put her hand on Amelia's head in the Big Bang, I was expecting
a spark or something.
The thing from Father's Day with the Ninth Doctor, when Rose accidentally touched herself as a baby. So a little wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey going on there. But other than that, great episode. I'd probably give it about 4 out of 5.
All right. And Perry also in chat gave it a 4. So it's been the general consensus, I think. But obviously, Darth gave it 5. All right. Yeah. Well,
you know, it was a good, you know, it had a good Christmas feeling to it, and it was a good episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we all kind of agree with that. All right, Kyle. Well, I'm glad we worked out the audio problems and got you on board.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, and I wish everyone a good holiday and a good 2011.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Same to
Cheers.
You all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we have this is going to be unusual for our live show, but we actually have, right before the show, a piece of feedback that came in, and it's very, very quick. Otherwise, I wouldn't even include it on the live show, but since it is very quick...
Hi, guys. Peter from New York. My last email was really long, so I wanted to make this one really short. Doctor Who Christmas Carol. Good news is I really, really loved it. Bad news is it broke a lot of established canon laws of time, which could easily be explained away. Okay, goodbye. How's that for short?
That's very short.
Oh, I like to come back at the end.
Well, I thought it was very fitting after, you know, speaking with Kyle there about the two Kyzarns touching each other and all. Doesn't that go back to even further a Fifth Doctor story with the Brigadier, the older Brigadier and the younger Brigadier?
When they're wandering around, aren't they? They're not supposed to touch one another. Is it when they're in the TARDIS?
I haven't seen that story in a very, very long time. I really need to see that again.
Yeah, there's two versions of the Brig in the TARDIS, isn't there? Oh, we'll get corrected on that. You'll get feedback on that, no doubt about it.
All right, well, I want to thank you, Dave, for putting up with all this technical snafus and nonsense going on with this show, and I'm glad we got through it all. And everyone that participated, I want to thank everyone. It was a good show, despite our problems. You know, thank you, everyone, for putting up with all those problems, but we got through it.
Indeed, just about.
So looking forward to next series, the next season. It's going to be split in two. We got a trailer, which was very interesting. We already spoke about it, so no sense going into it again. But it's something to look forward to. I think it's I'm looking forward to it. We don't have a start date, but we can expect it to be probably, traditionally, it's either end of March or more recently April. So
yeah, I haven't got the date to hand. There's lots of things happening in the new year. We've got Primeval coming back, we've got Torchwood coming back, so we're on a roll.
Yes, we are. And we'll keep you posted about it all on Doctor Who Podshock and on our website, podshock.net. All right, well, and so that's going to wrap things up for this episode. And what I'll do is I'll play a remaining clip I think I have here. I didn't use all of them because I only have so many slots with Gizmo here, and my the original setup I was had, I was going to be able to do them all, but so it'll be.
Where's the doctor?
I've been running faster than I've ever run. Now it's time for me to stop.
I'm going to need a SWAT team ready to mobilize, street level maps covering all of Florida, a pot of coffee, 12 jammy Dodgers, and a fez.
Somewhere different, somewhere brand new. I wear a Stetson now. Stetsons are cool.
We've been recruited.
Recruited by who?
You're going to have to trust us this time.
You have to do this, and you can't ask why.
My life in your hands, Amelia Pond. You see these eyes? They're old eyes. And one thing I can tell you, monsters are real.
Now, that was obviously the trailer there. I should have introduced it as such. Anyway, cheers, everyone.
Cheers,
Happy
everyone.
New Year. Happy holidays. New Year.
Happy holidays.
Boxing Day.
Happy Boxing Day.
Bye, all.
You've been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode also supported by the Doctor Who Podshock Podcast Companion app for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch.
It's not really the singing, of course.
Yes, it is.
Nah.
Fish love the singing, it's true.
Nah, the notes resonate in the ice crystals, causing a delta wave pattern in fog. Ow, fish bit me.
Shut up, then.
Of course, that sound the machine controls the cowbell. The clouds are ice crystals. If you could vibrate the crystals at exactly the right frequency, you could align them into... Ow, why do they keep biting?
Look, fish like the singing, okay? Now shut up.